Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware. And I think I'm a bit stressed.
Oh. Why is that, darling?
We have a vegan.
I know, they're always stressful.
And I think I've overcompensated out of nerves.
Yeah.
Like you do with the chefs, I've done with the vegan.
Well, I do that as well. I've got a vegan for dinner tonight.
You can have... I've made two different soups because I wasn't sure whether my first soup was good, so I've made two different... So you've got soup for a starter, Mum.
I've got soup anyway for a starter at mine.
What vegan soup are you doing?
Tomato and sourdough soup.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Delicious.
Oh, shit, I should have done that today.
Dead easy.
Okay, well, I'm on food cooking duties today, and it is a pleasure to host Johnny Marr.
Wow.
But yes, he is a vegan, and I get very nervous, and you were very happy to give me... this, but of course we've got a child that is sick in inverted commas. She's watching telly next door, and it's all going to be okay. The sun's shining at least, isn't it?
Yeah. What are you making, darling?
Okay, so I have made roast parsnip and pear soup with white beans, and then you have it with a rosemary and sage pesto, which instead of parmesan, and I can't mess with that vegan parmesan. It smells like sick. I'm sorry. Somebody needs to work on it.
Okay.
I've put this cashew parmesan thing, which is nice.
Okay.
So you do that and you drizzle that. But I'm a bit worried the soup is quite sweet. However, the herby thing works with it. Now, because I thought it was too sweet.
Yeah.
I made a cauliflower soup.
Yeah.
From the New York Times, which is very creamy.
Yeah.
So
we're having two soups?
No, we're not having two soups. Okay. And then I've made two
sides.
So
it's choice of soups.
No, I don't even know if I should even offer a choice. Can you just taste the... I know you're going to say it's a bit sweet, but I want to... before he comes.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I've done a New York Times recipe. It is pearl barley with a radicchio and shiitake mushrooms that are kind of crispy.
Ooh, sounds
and you do
lovely.
It like with a balsamic reduction with shallots. So that's
great.
Quite nice.
Gorgeous.
And then I've done grilled broccoli with this... mixture of sizzled nuts and seeds that you do, and you put a few medjool dates in and lemon juice.
Wow.
So that's nice. So yeah, Johnny Marr is coming on the podcast for a spot of lunch, and we shall be talking all things food, family, music, guitars. Johnny Marr coming up on Table Manners. Johnny Marr, you're here. You're ready to be fed. Do you know much about the podcast? Have they prepped you? You're basically going to be asked about food.
Yeah, I mean, I know a little bit. I deliberately try to avoid being too prepped because I like kind of being natural and winging it and just reacting.
That's
I've learned
exactly
over the years to try and do that.
So we usually. Can talk about City's accomplishments, Phil Foden.
You look like
all
you're in pain.
Things.
I appreciate that. You've been
you
very
think
nice.
I look like I'm in pain. Yeah,
saying
only
City's
a
compliment.
Bit.
Well, we were like, we're going to get annihilated at the weekend.
I
and
was
then
kind
Rashi
of
scored.
It was 3-1.
No, I get that. You know, I know it goes.
Can I get you anything to drink apart from water? I've got lots of things.
Have you? You have juice? So I've got
apple juice, orange juice.
You know,
wine?
I don't drink. Talk about
do
that
you
if
not
you want.
Drink?
No, I'll have orange juice, please.
Okay.
That'd be great. Just a bit of vitamin C. No, I'm a very kind of a enthusiastic teetotaler.
Are you?
Yeah.
Is that because you used
you're
to drink...
You're looking at me a bit weird.
Is that because you used to drink so
well, that's
much?
Usually, no, because it looked like a really good idea. Instead of it being that I'm giving something up...
Yeah, you embrace it.
I actually gave myself the gift of, like, being a teetotaler, and it's brilliant. I love it. Usually, journalists particularly... make a big deal of it because, oh, I suppose you've got to talk to me about something. But there's a lot of assumptions come with it that, you know, because you don't drink. And I understand that. And generally people assume like that in the 80s, like I'd sort of hung my children off the roof with Ozzy Osbourne. And like, well, I did a bit of that. but they've got that, you know, my drink and drugs hell thing, but it isn't that. It's like a much more positive thing.
When did you give up?
When I was about 20 odd years ago, I got to a point, because I had two mates who were, one of them had been in AA and another one had, was very anti-AA, but was into running and all of that. And I just thought, that looked really good. They both looked really like younger than the years, and they weren't waking up in the morning hating themselves for saying some stupid shit the night before. And I thought, that looks really good. So I'm a great taker-upper of things. In psychology, it's called appetitive thinking. There's aversive thinking, which is I will avoid, and I'm going to stop. And then there's appetitive thinking, which, as in I will have the appetite for.
Oh, appetitive.
It's interesting, that, isn't it?
Yeah, very.
But I didn't realise that what I was doing was called appetitive thinking. I wasn't that clever. I just went, I just didn't see it as giving up something. I thought of it as giving myself the gift of. And it worked. And I got really into it and started running marathons and everything. And like flipping Forrest Gump.
I know you were a footballer. And you had to choose between football and... So who were you playing for? Were you in an academy?
City Juniors I played for. Like the youth team it was. City youth team. So I was about 15. And then I got offered an apprenticeship for Forrest. And I was actually... I had this moment in my house where I got in from a game, but I had been... playing, not a show, but I've been with my mates. We used to rehearse a lot. And I've got out of the flipping rehearsal room. And on the Saturday night, I've been playing. And I used to wear eyeliner and all this. It was like 1978. And so I've been with my band, which is what I did all the time. And my girlfriend, who's now my wife. And so I played the game quite as I often did with last night's eyeliner on, right? I used to get kicked quite a lot. So I came in from the match on the Sunday, playing for the Sunday league team, and I came in at the house and the two guys from Forest were there, but I actually have my guitar because I've been rehearsing the night before, so I actually walked in with my guitar and with my football boots in a bag and all of that. So it was kind of almost like a symbolic thing, really. And, obviously I was amazed. It was to get an opportunity to have an apprenticeship. But it was a bit of a no-brainer. I went, well, I'm in a band. And
what did your dad think?
I can't believe this guy. He's a bigger idiot than I think he is. But, well, the thing about it as well was that I played with a couple of guys who ended up being pro. This was when I was a kid.
Who were they?
And I saw one was David Bardsley, who ended up playing for QPR, and he got a couple of England caps. A guy called Gary Blissett, who ended up playing for Wimbledon. And there was a couple of guys who ended up playing for City. And, like, apprentices. And... I twigged at about 14, 15, that their intensity about playing. So when we used to practice and be training, their intensity was like there. And I just liked running around and having fun.
Which position did you play? Were you defender?
Right wing.
Right
wing. But then your intensity with playing the guitar was up there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what I had for playing the guitar and forming the band, I did a thing for... It was at Arena, I think, recently with Jack Grealish, where I interviewed him. And it was when he was going through a bit of a slump, his slump last season, I think. And we got chatting, and he was so great. You know, he is what you think he is. He's so disarming because he's just so open and
he looks guileless. Lovely.
He's a really, really nice guy. He's a lovely guy. And we got chatting about it, but I think he was surprised that it's not the first time I've had these conversations with a footballer where... My teenage experience was much like theirs. In other words, I understand what it takes, but what we have in common, and I mentioned this to him, I was like, if you grow up in the UK, don't know whether it was the same for you, Jesse, but I have stood at a bus stop on a Thursday night, a Wednesday night and a Tuesday night in the rain, getting wet with my guitar case at 15, 16, or, you know, and getting on buses and all of that. When my pals are... getting ready to go to the pub or having fun. I mean, this is back in the early 80s, late 70s, so the world's different now. But looking at that from the outside, from the footballer's point of view, that's them making a sacrifice. Mm. Not going to the pub, not drinking, being disciplined, going to training, standing in the cold, whatever. And I did that as a guitar player in all these bands I was in and not getting on two buses to go to rehearsals in the red light district of Manchester when I was 14 and all that. But I loved it. So now I'm an older person, I can see it was a sacrifice. But at the time, I didn't want to be in the pub with my mates. I didn't.
It's what you wanted to do.
I want to know how your girlfriend, who's now your wife, what, how many years you've been together? Over 40?
Yeah, since 1979.
Did she ever say, Johnny, can you just not go to rehearsal? Because I would really like you to take me out tonight.
No, she was the reverse. She was like, well, Angie, you know, I suppose it's a long story, but when we met, I was 15, she was 40, and I was kind of like, I am a guitar player who is going to be in a band, and I'm going to be a musician, I'm going to be a guitar player. And she was like, that sounds good, I'll be a guitar player's girlfriend. And the thing about that is that, well, I always say this, she made me brave, you know, and that mission, walking around council estates, because we did a lot of that because there was nowhere to go and didn't really... So we went through periods of where I didn't really get along with my parents, and it was mostly my fault. But we were kicking around on a 70s council estate in Manchester with, like, just dreams. And that's so much easier to accomplish when you've got your soulmate with you at 15.
That's sweet.
Can you imagine without it, I would have just been doing it all on my own and would have been much more difficult. But when you've got someone who is with you on that and really believes in you, and he's super, super smart. And then, and that's been the way it's been through. Then it was through the Smiths and through the Smiths split and there and all the bands I've been in. And to this day, you know, you've got that. I've been very, 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 very lucky.
So you were in Ardwick.
Till I was 10. I moved out of Ardwick when I was 10, and then I moved to
the Smiths. When you were 10. But that isn't that where the Gallaghers were as well, Ardwick?
Well, Noel was born in the same place I was, which is Levensham. Yeah, we were born in exactly the same place. We've got so much in common, Noel and myself. Irish families, Mancunian Irish,
You're his idol, aren't you?
I'm actually, he's one of his, a really close mate. Inspired him. I won't say idol, but
I mean, and now you're
but
good
I think
friends.
Even,
but
he
I mean,
tries
it's...
to look like you a bit.
Well, you know, it's a guitar playing thing, really. If you're from Manchester and you smoke pot and you like the, and you like 60s music, you kind of tend to look, it's a bit of a kind of uniform in a way, but I just got there before him because I'm older.
So what was the first band you were in?
The first band I was in was called Paris Valentinos.
Oh, I quite like
lovely
that
name.
It was very new wave.
Oh, it's fancy.
It is. I know, it's very
it was
fancy.
Too fancy.
It's like, imagine if that was a cake.
The Paris Valentinos. Yeah.
Well, it was all like
makes you sound handsome, like you're all gorgeous looking men.
Well, we weren't bad. But I started my first band. I wrote in my best mate as a singer when I was 11. He was called Chris Milne. He was great. So this might sound fanciful, but it is that my priority was to do what I'm doing now from being 11. I always was like, where's the other? Usually a guy, but I've worked with so many women as well. So I would wrote my best mate in. So my first band is... It's at 11, but the reason I bring it up is because I actually was very serious about it. I look back now and I was like, flipping heck. I was like really serious. It was the main thing I was doing, you know, more than homework.
School? Which school were you at?
Well, I was at Sacred Heart Primary School. And so when I moved from the inner city to the, I don't know whether this is interesting, but when I moved from the inner city to the suburbs, for me, there was a massive...
You think Withinshaw's the suburbs?
See, yeah. See?
Why, are you from the suburbs, Mum?
I think I'm nearer in than you, actually,
well,
Cheetham Hill.
God, just flipping out. Cheetham Hill. Well, just make sure my wallet is... Don't take this the wrong way. But, no, because it was so the inner city, where there was me and my sister, then my younger brother was just about to come along. I was very close to my sister. She's 11 months younger than me, so we're called Irish twins. Mm. And my mum and dad... were still are Irish. They're both very young when I was born. So we grew up...
How old were they?
18, I think. So I had a very close relationship with my mum because she was always like a young woman, right? But when we moved from the inner city, which I remember very well, that being what, 8 or 9 or whatever, to this Withinshaw is considered quite a rough place, but to me and my sister, it was like moving to Beverly Hills.
Yeah. I want to know, you had your sister 11 months apart, you had your younger brother.
Yeah, he arrived about when I was about 9, yeah.
And when you were eating around the dinner table, were you listening to music and what were you eating?
Well, that's a good question because we didn't eat around the dinner table. The house was, so it was very working class, very 70s, very Irish, which was great. What it wasn't was that, so some of my pals, when they had what was called their tea, they'd sort of get together, maybe in a haphazard form, but they'd get together. Where in my house, my little brother would be crawling around with his toys on the floor. My sister would be upstairs, crimping her hair, playing Chic really, really loud. And she, my mum would go, what do you want for your tea? I have a cheese toastie. So my mum would like be like talking that. She's trying to sort the baby out. And you'd be like, what's John having? And I'd like, well, I'm having a cig. I'd be sort of sitting there waiting for a band to come on the telly. And I'd be like, have a baked potato with some beans on. Like, all right. So my mum would be just like, so I'd get mine.
A calf. She'd be doing that, a calf.
I'd get mine. And then 20 minutes later, my sister maybe would want hers. And then my little brother, he'd need feeding. And so it was quite, it was like brilliant sort of chaos, really.
Yeah.
The only time we sat around the table as a family to eat together was on Christmas Day. And I never knew any different, really. It was great.
Did you like sitting around the table, or was it? Did it feel quite
It felt odd. Very formal and a bit odd. I mean, I come from a really amazing, loving, very tight family, but that's just the way we did it.
Could you eat something? Because I've made vegan food.
That's amazing. Thank you. Yeah, of course.
You don't have to have a lot.
No.
I've got a couple of salads. I've got some soup. You can have a bit of everything or a little bit of nothing.
I'll try a bit of everything, bit of everything.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to get the stuff together. You two can keep on talking.
What did your parents do? Did they work?
Yeah. My mum did a lot of different jobs of all kinds of stuff. You know, sometimes she worked in a news agent. I remember that. And then she worked sort of doing admin for Barclays Bank. And like, my dad, all his life, worked putting gas pipes in the road. So when he used to come in,
crikey,
he would be black, from covered in dirt from head to toe. And he loved it, and he was great at it. He would go out at 5:45 in the morning in his van, and he'd pick up a few of his pals, and they'd go out to Liverpool or Oldham or whatever, and he'd dig the road up. And so he was a strong, hard-working, very, very quiet, broody guy to be around.
But he liked music as well.
He absolutely loved me. He still does. Both my parents are still around. I'm very lucky for that. They were quite hardy country. They're from Kildare in Southern Ireland.
How gorgeous.
And they were never like, neither of them smoked.
Were they both born there?
Oh, yeah.
And then came over?
Yeah, they came over. They met in Kildare, and they came over here for work with, my mum's from a family of 14.
Oh!
And my dad's from a family, I think it's five.
All those cousins. How many cousins have you got? You must have 100.
I was one of the first of the kids born. And then, honestly, it's like on a weekly basis, all these little babies, these cousins were sprouting up around me. And, you know, Dermot and Declan and Amy, all these Irish kids, you know. I didn't hear an English accent until I was about 7.
So do you cook? Who does the cooking at home? Or is it still a baked potato with baked beans?
If it was left up to me, well, I've been very fortunate in a few areas of my life this goes through. Because Angie and I have been together, and she's got a really good cook from being kids. Well, actually, when she met me, I was so independent. I cooked. She reminded me of this before I came here today. I was like a very independent teenager, 13, 14, 15. There's another thing, it's a real Irish thing, that. Went to my first ever show when I was 12. When I wrote my autobiography, I did that in 2016. I was doing a lot of research and I was thinking about my first ever gig, which was this band called Slaughter and the Dogs in Manchester. And I checked the date and everything, and I realised I was 12. And I remember going and walking back on my own and getting in at about whatever, 12:30 at night. And I phoned my mum and I went, Mum, do you remember when I went to that punk gig? Like, and it was in 1976. And she's, no, I don't, not really. I went, do you know, I was 12. And she went, yeah. I was like, what are you thinking? She went, well, you knew what you were doing. Well, I went, 12? So anyway, by the time I met Angie, when I was 15, I had quite a lot of street smarts about me. I'd had a couple of part-time jobs. I was expert at ducking out of school when I didn't need to be there. Thank you, Jesse. Wow.
You don't like coriander?
No, I don't.
But you do.
It makes me angry.
Okay, well, I've avoided coriander, but there is parsley, sage, rosemary, things like that.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. That looks amazing.
Well, we've got some salads as well.
When did you move out of home?
When I was 15.
15?
Yeah. I went to live with my best mate, who was then, a few years later, became the bass player in the Smiths, Sandy Rourke. His parents had separated and left the house in Ashton-on-Mersey in
Sale. So you're living on your own?
No, for me and four boys.
Bloody hell.
It was amazing.
You have collaborated with so many people. Pet Shop Boys, Brian Ferry, Talking Heads.
Yeah.
Who fed you the best out of that lot? Did anyone feed you? I know you're making music, making brilliant stuff, but anyone put on a good spread?
Hans Zimmer.
Oh, come on, man. Tell me about
Hans Zimmer's amazing. Well, when you work with Hans...
Yeah.
So there'll either be a chef in the studio.
I like that.
It's good, eh?
Yeah.
So when I first started working with Hans in 2010, I don't know how long... Do you know about Cafe Gratitude in...
I am... fulfilled. I am...
There you go.
Satiated, yes.
All of that.
I am full of shit.
Exactly. No, I am exactly. Cafe Attitude.
Cafe Attitude.
I thought of opening something along the lines of that. You were thinking that's completely the opposite.
Oh, my God, I love that idea.
Where someone's really kind of a bit arsey. It's like, I am narky. I am hungover. I am this. And do it with... everyone's got to have a Manchester accent. Call it Cafe Attitude.
So for anybody who's listening, Cafe Gratitude is a place... that's very pleased with itself in LA, which actually was one of the first places to do really good vegan food.
Is that the one in Venice?
They've got a few, I think.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And it is good.
I've been with Hammer.
But anyway, they're just really pleased themselves. Okay, so you're having... this is roast parsnip and pear soup.
It's delicious.
Sage and rosemary, cashew, palm. I couldn't give you that vegan parmesan. It's so disgusting. So I've got like a cashew thingy. Anyway, it's all vegan.
I wasn't aware that you actually cooked the food on this podcast.
Yes.
Winner.
She's done it this time.
Usually it's Lenny, but she's scared of vegetarianism.
Okay. I might redress the balance for you. You have to tell me what your ideas are about it.
Well,
I don't have any ideas about it.
You've talked about going vegan when you brought out Meat is Murder.
Yeah, so what happened? So Angie was vegetarian anyway, okay. Right? And so where was I, 14, 15, full disclosure? I was very independent, very streetwise. My life was hanging out with older people, usually older guys, because where I grew up, there was a lot of older lads who were into playing the guitar and forming bands. And because I was so single-minded and passionate and it was all I wanted, I won't say ambitious. Like, obviously, that comes into it. You have to be ambitious.
Yeah.
But I just never saw any other... it was a vocation. There wasn't a plan B. This is amazing.
Thank you.
Really delicious.
Really good.
Thank you.
But to absolutely get back to the gorgeous food thing, at 14 stuff, I learned about sagging off school. And I used to go to Central Library and I used to do stuff. And what it was that a lot of my older mates had already left school, see.
Yeah.
They'd left at, whatever, 16. And I'd be with them in the evening and we'd be playing at my mates. A lot of activity happened in this middle-class boy's house. Because he was middle-class, his parents were quite liberal. And we almost had this, like, salon, if you like. And a bunch of lads were really serious about all the rock music that was going on at the time. And we discussed it and we played it and we learned to play it. And then when punk came along, we learned to play like Television and Blondie, and we were really getting our chops up. And they were older than me and I was still at school, so I'm there with my tie on, and the next day they were going to hang out at Virgin Records or they were going to go and get a ticket to go and see Lou Reed or whatever. And I just went, well, what am I doing sitting in a class when I'm like you guys? So that was why I was sagging off school. I wasn't wandering around like, you know, hating school. I just was like, I'm done now. And so the school sort of accepted my resignation, if you like. But I had a lot of time during the day and I was practicing and playing, listening to records and waiting for Angie to come out of school because she went to the school across from me. And I was really, really super into smoking pot because I was from Manchester and I was a guitar player. It's the law in it. So and I was good at it. So me and my mates would be getting stoned in the afternoon, like between us putting our resources together and listening to music and taking it very seriously, because getting stoned was part of it. And so I learned to make a really, you know, knock up a really great omelette and beans and sausage and dead quick. So when Angie met me, she was like, this guy, like, he can smoke in the house, he can iron, he can sew up his jeans, he can turn flares into straight legs, and he can cook, because she was 14. She was thinking, wow, my hero. But that was the last time I ever bothered cooking then, because then I was around people, and to this day, so my son, for instance, my son is...
How many kids have you got?
I've got two. I've got my daughter's just about to be 30. She's like a Jedi in publishing and podcasting. And my son is a really great musician, really good guitar player and singer and songwriter, and he works with Hans Zimmer mostly and puts out his own albums. But he is super vegan, and he's an amazing cook. So he makes everything from scratch. So if he's going to make cashew milk or almond milk, he'll make it from almonds. He'll make his own pesto, and then up and up and up. He's an amazing cook. So I'm really spoiled from being 15. The last time I was like doing that myself was when I was a 15-year-old stoner going, right, I'll cook up some munchies. And then I got this amazing girlfriend who's very mature for her age and stuff. And then we became inseparable from the word go. But there was a little bit in between. This gives you a little about my food history, how far I've come. But because I was really just bothered about working in a clothes shop to make money for guitar strings and get clothes, trying to form a band, avoid school, avoid the authorities, and my girlfriend. And when I was working clothes shops, I used to just live off little bottles of lemonade and chocolate.
Oh, geez.
And then at the end of the day, there used to be a thing in the late 70s, early 80s, people of a certain vintage might know this, in the north anyway, called Spud You Like.
Yeah.
Oh, like Jacket Potato in that shop.
Yeah, Spud You Like.
We used to have it too, didn't we?
Did you?
Yeah.
It was brilliant. So when Angie, not long after she met me, I used to just live off lemonade
and jacket potato.
And jacket potato.
I feel jacket potatoes are coming up in every podcast recently.
Did you bring your children up vegan?
Vegetarian, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
my daughter is.
Meat is murder. Were you vegan or vegetarian at that point?
Vegetarian. So, yeah, what happened? Angie was vegetarian. We didn't make a big deal of it. The point of all that preamble was food was just something that just had, was like a necessity that just had to be got done with as quickly as possible.
Right.
So I could crack on with the important
business. Has that changed?
Massively.
Okay, right.
Massively. Yeah, I've just been out eating in the Maldives in a restaurant where you have to enter it via a rope bridge. It's my favourite place in the world. That culinary experience, walking over the rope bridge into this, essentially a restaurant that's like a treehouse.
Wow.
And just it being done really well, like really delicate, super nice portions and everything. I've come a long way from...
From
Sigs and Spud You Like.
So Hans Zimmer does catering.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah.
Did your son encourage him to do vegan catering now? Is that what it is all the time? Or?
No, but my son's brought to the live crew. I mean, you imagine it's a really big production with a lot of people.
Mm.
I think my son's turned quite a lot of people onto veganism, I think.
So Angie was vegetarian. Meat is Murder comes out. You're like, can't really be eating meat.
That's right.
That's just come out.
And actually just before, in fact, because I find that people, in some ways, people almost got into this when I got super into running. People almost fetishise food in a sort of unhealthy way to the point where they almost put all these rules on and don't enjoy it. You know, like, I don't know, it's a complicated thing. People probably know more than I do, but... Because I was so not bothered, it was quite easy in a way as well to become to become vegetarian, because it was a bit of a no-brainer. Angie was vegetarian, and I was sort of anyway, like, so if Angie was not, you know, I wasn't going to eat meat if Angie was. I just thought, oh, she's fine, she doesn't like it, so I'll have whatever.
Mm.
I'll have, you know, sort of veggie pie, or I'll have some soup or something like this. This was when I was younger.
Yeah.
Early days of the Smiths. So it wasn't like a major big drama. I think that's what I'm trying to say, because people, it's a little different now, but 25 years ago, people would ask me about being vegetarian, and it was almost like I'd sort of, you know...
It was like you and Paul McCartney.
I was in some weird cult.
Mm.
And it was more difficult when you were travelling. Like, so I hadn't really seen much of the world when I first started out in the Smiths, but going, especially around Europe, Spain, I remember, in Germany, it was risotto, you know... The world's completely different now, and like a lot of people enjoy vegetarian and vegan food for the experience of it.
Were all the Smiths vegetarian?
I think a couple of the guys used to have the nip off and have a sly burger now and again.
Can I get you a plate, and would you like any salads?
I'll have a little bit of salad, thank you.
But I don't want to... Are you finished with your soup?
Yeah.
Okay.
Woof that down.
You don't have to take much. We've got a tiny pud after as well, which I don't know if it's going to be any good. My mum's... Right, help yourself.
Do you want to put that on for us?
Pardon, should I put it on?
Thanks.
This is shiitake mushrooms with a bit of pearl barley and radicchio.
Wow. What do you think? Do you like it?
Delicious.
This is great. Did you do it? So, yeah, you do it all right.
No, yeah, I mean, today I did it all, but Mum's usually...
between the two of you.
Yeah, we do it, yeah.
Is that... And you want some more, Danny?
Just a little bit, yeah.
And then this is just...
Thank you.
Broccoli under the grill, and then it's got, like, nuts and medjool dates and kind of, yeah. I mean, I...
This is how me and my family live.
Right.
Perfect, thank you.
Is Ottolenghi your god?
A new religion, yeah. Ottolenghi, yeah. The Church of Ottolenghi. Yeah.
And Anna Jones. Do you like Anna Jones?
I don't know Anna Jones.
Well, she's fab. She's got a really good new book. I'll show it to you. It's great.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You know, one of the things that I noticed when I became vegetarian, it's a little esoteric, this, but I'm that way inclined. I'm not trying to, you know, prove any big point or whatever, but I started to notice that I actually started to like and relate to animals much more when I stopped eating them. Now, that's maybe that before that, I didn't really relate to them very much. I am aware of that because I was such a... inner city kid, and as a, you know, and essentially my relationship with animals was that dog looks like it might want to bite me. Oh yes, it does. Run,
right?
Because we're so, you know, urban, if you like, in a city. It wasn't like I didn't get much opportunity to actually walk around fields and look at dogs. I wasn't that interested, frankly.
So, did you get a pet?
Oh, I mean, I've had dogs for years. I've got big dogs.
What's their name?
One's called Indy, and the other one's called Buzz. But the one I had before that was called Riff.
That's a really good dog name.
And the one before
that
was called Boogie. And then I had Otis and Curtis. I absolutely love animals. A bit of that's because Angie's like the dog whisperer.
You speak so fondly of Angie. It is so gorgeous. I really hope that my husband... I've been with my husband since we were 18. And I really don't think he's talking about me like you're talking about Angie. I don't think many people are. You've been together for over 40 years and it sounds like you just got together and you're just so excited about... You adore her.
Well, I do, yeah. But we're kind of like, in a way, though, we're two halves of the same coin. I don't mean to try and make this sound like a love song, but no, you know, some relationships, some people are the opposite. Obviously, there's maybe that's even mostly the case. But because we met so young and we were on this mission, maybe we were alike anyway. I mean, we're not... Yeah, we do have our differences, but because it's been so long and we've maybe sort of morphed into the same entity in a way, if you like. I think that's maybe why.
Is that good for your kids or annoying for them? Because you'll always agree on the same thing. So you won't be like, ask your mother because it'll be the same.
Oh, question. No, listen, we've got that normal dynamic that every household has, which is like, you know, I'm still a bloke and she's still a woman. I get played plenty, you know what I mean? Classic dad,
okay.
Dad business.
Okay,
but I think it's good for the kids, really. I think the kids are saying that we're really tight.
And they must see that as such a positive example of relationships.
Where did you get married?
San Francisco, in the Church of the Not Too Bothered. It was great.
On tour.
Yeah.
How old were you?
85, so I would have been like 22, something like that, 21. 85, we got married.
How many people were in the room?
The band and the crew. And you know, you'll know, but because we sort of just did it impromptu, like we decided 2 days before, like, oh, we've got a day off, why don't we get married? Very romantic. All the crew, particularly back then, you know, like they all sort of rocked up like with stubble, and I think one of them was wearing like a tour t-shirt inside out under a jacket. You know, they had no, you know, like, oh, what do you mean we're going to a wedding? And I remember one of them had like tried to iron his collar, and it was they were all very sort
misfits.
Of
misfits. I like that. That's
haphazard.
Great. That's so sweet.
Yeah, well, we were, the Smiths were like famously a little unconventional and sort of wayward. We, you know, we didn't have a lot of organisation. Me and Angie were organising it, and we were young, you know. So
was Morrissey your best man?
He was actually, yeah.
Did he do a good speech?
There was no speech involved, I don't think. It was pretty unconventional. And loose and bohemian, you know, which is kind of what we've got in our bones, really.
Have you ever renewed your vows? I think it's time, Johnny. to do a do.
In the Maldives.
In the Maldives.
It's a scoop.
I just think maybe you should.
Wow.
Don't you think it's time? Celebrate those 40 years.
You know what, guys? We renew them every day.
Oh, my God. Please.
Got myself out of that one.
Oh, my word.
You're going on tour. Is it with the orchestra or without the orchestra?
This year is without the orchestra, but I think next year I'm going to take the orchestra out.
Peter, the big Johnny Marr Smiths fan in the corner, went to see your gig in Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
Travelled in the pissing rain. The trains were cancelled, weren't they, or something? Weren't they all cancelled? Anyway, he got there, he said it was one of the best gigs he's ever been to.
Is that right?
Yeah, we loved it so much at Christmas.
Oh, thanks so much. That's good to hear. Yeah.
But
great.
So, I mean, you're going to be busy for the next year. Touring in April, doing festivals,
and then
going and doing... Oh, you're doing the States?
Yeah.
Do you like touring in the States?
Yeah, I like touring, yeah.
When are you going to be there?
I'm going to be there end of September, October.
Oh, that's the best time to tour the fall.
Weirdly, I didn't like touring until I was in my 40s. I did all years and years of it. I just didn't like it.
Why do you think? What changed for you?
Well, being a frontman changed it.
Okay.
Not because, suddenly I'm getting more adoration, but because one of the reasons I didn't like it was because I was so obsessed with being in the studio and making records. Mm. I was that guy, first one in the morning, last one out at night. I'll fix the outro. I was just all these different people I was working with. I had my own studio and all that. It was exactly what I wanted to do. But I found that when I started writing my own lyrics and fronting the band and everything, quite rightly, I don't think there's a precedent for a singer setting the microphones up, being the first in the morning, there in the morning, being the last at night. I don't think the engineer/producer makes a very good singer. So it's a whole long thing, but because I've been in bands for so long, running bands from being 15 and everything, I know that what's important when you're in the studio is for the singer, are you feeling like singing? And have you got the third verse sorted out? You haven't just pasted the first verse and the second verse together to make a third verse of it. That's important. Now, when I started doing my solo stuff, because I've got all that experience, I went into my own studio with my engineer or co-producer. I made a decision on that day. Don't ask me about reverbs. Don't ask me whether we're going to have the ribbon mics on the overheads. This was all stuff that I really loved because I know how things should be.
You needed to just perform.
And get the lyrics right and have an overview and literally take 5 steps back from the mixing desk and be the front man and the singer. Because usually before that, I was that guy, head in the speakers, editing this, that and the other, and as well as playing the guitar.
But that must have been really hard to relinquish that control, and you must have had to get the right people in for you to feel that you could do that and kind of feel like you could be the front man, be able to relax and not worry that the reverb isn't right.
It was a very pragmatic decision, and I knew it would be good for the group. A bit circuitous, whatever the word is, I'm going off on the tangent, but this is why I ended up liking touring so much, because my perspective of the studio changed. Like every good frontman, I want to be out of there. I don't want to be in there all day. Mm. The guitarists love being in the studio for 15 hours. They'll be in there all the time. The producer will. And I made a shift. It just happened that part of taking care of the business of fronting the band. Mm. Well, because what I was going to say was that the great front people that I've worked with, and my mind always goes to Chrissie Hynde, there's a thing they do for their band. When you're in a band and you've got a great singer, not just a great singer, but a great front man or front woman, it's not just about standing up at the microphone and being in the middle. It's about leading everyone on stage. Mm. It's about the vibe in rehearsals. I saw that for years and years, and I was clocking it, and I was like, I've got to be that for my band. I've got to be that for my band.
Or I've got to not be like that for my band.
There is that side of it. That's on the other side. Mm. Yeah. Memo to self, do not do that.
Don't be a dick.
As much as I can. So, in other words, I really honour that role.
So what was Chrissy... Why was she so impressive? Was it seeing her in the rehearsal rooms or on stage?
Well, the very first thing was... Because the first thing I did was going to a rehearsal room was see her in the rehearsals. And she sings in rehearsals like she's singing in front of 300,000
That really helps, doesn't it? Because then it feels like you're taking it seriously and then everyone else wants to up their game of performing. So it's not like they're just kind of noodling.
Because it can get a bit like that sometimes. Uh-huh. And you... That word ennui, you know, like French word where it can get a bit low energy.
That boring.
Yeah. Low energy. So Chrissy, even though she comes out of the punk period and she will, you know, she'll say, oh, I'm not such a great guitarist. She is. And I just get up there and do it. The first time I stood next to her in the rehearsal room, she was not dicking about. And she also loves the business of being in a band. That's one of the things that she and I have in common. She loved the role of, she has a thing about the guitarist is a certain kind of role. So I was like, well, I can be that. And I am that. And so we had this great relationship. And just the way, you know, she's the leader of the gang, really, without making a big deal of it. You just think, so when you walk out on stage, back then, this was just after I'd left the Smiths, I was 20, I think maybe still only 23 when I left the Smiths.
Right, wow.
23?
Yeah.
When did the Smiths form? How old were you?
Just 19, so it's like 5 years. So maybe it was 24, just 24 when I left. But what it was I'd never played in front of 100,000 people before, but because I'd joined the Pretenders, we were on the road with U2, opening for U2 on the Joshua Tree tour. So, I mean, the Smiths were big, but we weren't playing in front of 100,000 people. And as we walked up the stage, the leader, Chrissy, looked completely fearless. And she was like, and so it's a really good feeling when you're 24 and you're the leader of the gang is sort of like, I got this, follow me. And I kind of went, that's the way to lead a band. That's the way to do it.
That's so cool. Where are you looking forward to eating on your tour? Is there one particular place that you will absolutely not miss out on, apart from Cafe Gratitude?
Well, I do think that America has got a, you know, like a lot of things, good and bad, it's ahead of the UK in quite a lot of things. And with veganism and vegetarianism, I lived in Portland, Oregon. Portland, Oregon's an amazing
great food.
Place. So I think I'm looking forward to Portland because God knows what they've got there.
Why did you live there?
I joined a band called Modest Mouse in 2005 and they were based there. And it was an amazing experience. Best time of my life.
Did you take your kids over?
On and off. Eventually the family plotted up there for a bit, yeah.
Why do you think it was the best time of your life? What made it so special?
Well, Modest Mouse, with me, we were a 7-piece band and they were a really unusual, eccentric, amazing. Each member of the band was super creative in their own right. The music was good. The music was also successful, which is always good. It's nice to get you out of the house. You know, the album went to number one, which first guitar record for years that had gone to number one. And we were playing really great shows. And it was a new world for me. My kids got to be in their teens, 15, 16. I'd started getting pretty fit. I mean, I was running sometimes around 18 miles before a gig.
Do you still run?
Yeah. Ran this
morning.
Every day? No, I wish, but no, I run 3 or 4 times a week.
And how long did you do this morning?
10 miles.
10 miles?
Yeah.
How long did it take you?
About an hour and 20, so I'm slowing up.
Are you ready for a cup of tea and a little vegan chocolate pot?
I'll also will move in.
Yeah, I mean, you have to kind of do as you're told. I'm now leading you through this culinary.
This is the best, I won't say interview, but I've ever done.
Oh, that's so course. Kind. It's not really an interview.
It's not an
that's what I mean, that's why I said that.
Can't do that. Your last supper, we always ask everybody this.
Yeah.
You're not going to die, you're going on a desert island.
Well, you know, at Starter, I'm going to say, over the years, whenever I've got... I mean, you guys might be able to inform me, but... You're going to take the piss now, but tofu. Tofu in like a sort of tamari sauce kind of thing. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jesse? Like
tofu
in tamari sauce.
Or soy sauce, that kind of like...
What, when it's in Japanese.
Yeah, exactly, like, yeah, and little spring onions.
Yes, it's delicious.
It's Japanese.
That wobbly. It's very, very light, almost silken tofu, yeah. Are you laughing?
Your face.
Yeah, I know, her face is going funny.
Tofu is not high on my agenda.
This is so nice, though, because you feel like you're having a starter and it just doesn't wreck you. You know, it's super light. And it's really, really tasty.
Okay.
I mean, I could also, the other side, if I'm feeling, you know, like, just if I'm not, can't get that, I like, similar vibe is mozzarella and tomato. You know, if you go to an Italian restaurant.
Yeah, mozzarella and tomato.
Buffalo mozzarella and tomato.
But you're not allowed to eat that because it's not vegan.
I'm definitely vegetarian. I haven't had meat for 40 years, but I can bend the rules for a bit of mozzarella.
What about a little omelette? Are you going to shove an omelette in there too?
Occasionally I'd have an omelette, yeah. Do you? For running, yeah.
Yeah, I bet. Right.
For protein. I'm strictly vegetarian.
So those are your two starters?
No, okay, yeah, kind of both of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to overthink it. Thank you, Jesse. I'll have some kind of penne with pesto, because if you put pesto on anything, I'll eat it.
But that's got parmesan in.
Yeah, again.
Yes, he's going vegetarian.
I'll look the other way. Lenny, I'll look the other way. I'm not that strict.
All right, darling. But would you have pesto at home?
Yeah.
You see, Jess.
So if I could put parmesan in that pesto.
But Niall makes amazing pesto, and that won't have dairy in it. So I'm pretty sure anything can be done without dairy.
I want to know which kind of cheese substitute he uses, if he does use a substitute, or he uses
his own nutritional yeast.
I think he'll do it out of cashews or something.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Cashew cheese.
Yeah, he'll do it out of cashews, yeah.
Is he Irish Niall or no. Sheik Niall?
He's named after Niall Rogers from Sheik, yeah.
So he's N-I-L-E,
yeah.
Okay.
The river, yeah.
As opposed to
Niall Rogers calls him his God's soul son, which is
God's soul son.
Yeah. Have you met Niall, Jesse? Have you met him?
I have met him.
Yeah, I've met him too. Yeah. He once asked me out. But he doesn't remember that.
Yeah, I did tell
Jesse,
him that.
Jesse, I was with another bloke at the time.
Well, I think he's asked out a few people, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has he? Where was that?
I went to see him perform, and the guy I went with was in advertising. It was something to do with that. And that's how I met him.
You didn't fancy it?
Kind of, yeah.
So this is...
Niall asked her out, great. Didn't surprise me.
It was a wet...
He hasn't done the podcast yet.
No. Well, maybe he gets
Friends
wrong.
Reunited. there's some Oatly cream if you want it. I'm going to just...
So she's still got it.
Yeah. Still got... Yeah.
She's still got it.
Yeah. Okay, let's just check.
Tell me what the cream is like.
Don't have the cream.
Why?
The chocolate's fine.
Why not the cream?
Because the cream is not... It doesn't need it, I don't think.
Okay.
Did we get the main?
The main, I'm just going to have some...
Penne with pesto.
Penne with pesto.
Okay.
It just delivers for me every time.
It just hits the spot. Right.
Yeah, it does, yeah. And also because of the running thing.
Yeah.
What's in this?
Wow.
Cocoa.
Yeah.
Cocoa powder, sugar.
Yeah.
Oat milk, corn flour... and vanilla essence, and then dark chocolate.
Very good.
It's a little bit like those ones that you get for your kids, like, you know, the little chocolate pots, Mousse. Like goo or something. Like, it's like...
Really, yeah, it's a little... It's
but
really
it is
nice.
It's homemade, and it worked.
No, it tastes...
Very clever, Jess.
It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Johnny. You're so sweet. You're so lovely.
Mm.
I didn't get your pudding. Did we get your pudding? We didn't get your pudding.
No, I'm going to... This is really basic. So my main course, pesto and... Some really good penne pasta with pine nuts. I'm not a savage. And it's going to be some well-done vegan. It has a vegan cheesecake.
Have you found a good vegan cheesecake anywhere?
Yeah.
Where?
So from the deli near my house.
Before we let you go, Johnny, I really have enjoyed chatting to you. You are such a great storyteller.
You have
Mars guitars. How many guitars are you up to now that you own?
I think I bought maybe two since that book came out. And in the book, I said, I've got 132. So I've got 134 officially.
Where are they?
I'm not going to tell you. You might have some... I don't know you guys.
But it's
might have
like,
someone go up there and rob me. And she's from flipping Cheatham Hill.
Johnny Marr, thank you so much for coming and spending time with us. And we can't wait to see you in concert and read the book. And listen to the best of... I mean, you're an overachiever, to be honest.
And can I tell you, for a vegan, I'm a little bit in love now.
Oh.
Oh. I'll take that. I will take that all day long. Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
I love Johnny Marr.
I'm in love with
Well,
Johnny
I feel
Marr.
Like you both had a very wow. wonderful Mancunian connection.
Yeah.
I think he was even flirting with you, Mother.
Yeah.
What a lovely man.
It's delightful.
The best stories. I don't think food was top of his priority,
no.
but he was incredibly complimentary about yeah. my vegan food. Should we talk about my vegan food, Mum?
It was amazing.
Yeah, tell me more.
That soup was off the scale.
Well, listen, that shout out to Hans Hungry on Instagram, who is, oh my God, just
that
start letting me be your ambassador. The Bold Bean company is in their cookbook, but it was...
Did that have beans in it?
It had white beans. Yeah.
Pears and white beans.
Oh. And parsnips.
Oh, it was delicious.
So I won't be needing that cauliflower soup that I did as well.
Freeze it, darling.
Oh, yeah.
For the next vegan.
Oh, yeah. That's such a good idea. That's a great idea.
Yes, yes.
Johnny Marr is touring in April. He has Marr's guitars. He's just given my daughter a plectrum, and he says if he sees it on eBay, he knows if it's going for $4.85, then he knows who sold it. So, darling, you're not allowed to put that on eBay.
Okay? Look at that.
And he also has his best of album out, Spirit Power. I absolutely loved him, and I'm going to get him to do a lick on my new record. Don't care.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.